Welcome to a fresh episode of the Call to Arms podcast, ladies and gentlemen. As always, we are produced and made possible by the amigo Toby from HR. Original art is by Alan Martin. Our original theme music is a track called Tropical Vikings by Careless Music Manila. It is our UAAP mid-season check-in. See where we were right, see where we were wrong. We'll tell you all about how we were right, and we'll casually, conveniently gloss over all the stuff that we were wrong about. Our great friend, the stat genius, the Twitter potty mouth, Mr. James Ryan Alba, is on the show with us as well. All that coming up right after this. This is the Call to Arms podcast. My name is Nico Ramos.
Something going on around the island. Money flowing wherever I've been promised. Just another Viking in the tropics. Taking over, trying to stop this novice. Make it killing, I'm finna conquer. I'm a dreamer, the floor is lava. Something going on around the island. Straight fire when we vibing.
Everybody's favorite UAAP Twitter man, Ryan Alba, rejoins the podcast. Don't forget us when you're famous, Ryan. Thanks for making time.
Glad to be back.
Have people been on your Twitter more now than before the UAAP started?
Yeah, but like, thank God there's not been like another beef. Like, I've been very clean since we last talked.
Oh, okay. So no one's upset at you?
I mean, not too upset. I mean, which I'm glad for, because, you know, I told you I'm trying to like be a nicer person, and I guess it's working.
It's one thing to try to be a nicer person. It's another thing to have stats and facts on your side talking about basketball. Those two things almost never really align. But hey, we try our best, don't we? We try our best.
Yeah, we try our best.
For those of you just listening now, Ryan was gracious enough to join us for two preview podcasts before the season started. And now the very convenient 1 week break in between the end of the first round and the start of the second round. There's going to be another break somewhere, right? Because of FIBA. We'll worry about what we'll do in terms of content when that rolls along. But now is a perfect time for us to get to podcasting about the UAP. My problem with the UAP schedule is this. If we do, say, for example, make a couple of podcast episodes in between game days, it's only just maybe 2 days away from another game day being played. Especially if it's a Wednesday, everybody plays, and it just completely ruins your outlook of the UAAP, because this season's been stupid.
It's been a roller coaster. Like, it's been, I feel like this, it's been the most unpredictable season that we've had in a long while.
And I'm in love with this season, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like, I love this season of the UAAP. Everybody's lost. Everybody's proven they can lose. Most teams have proven they can beat themselves. And some teams have proven they can beat just about anybody. And that's really all you want from, you know, from an 8-team collegiate basketball season. So this is what we'll do. It's a lot, obviously, to go team by team. So we'll try our best. And we'll eventually start talking about what we think the Final Four picture is going to be like. All those great stuff. Right, but similar to what we did in the preview episodes, we'll start from the quote unquote bottom of the standings and then work our way up to where the contenders are as we enter the Final Four. Well, the second round before we get to the Final Four. That sound good to you, Ryan?
Sounds great.
All right, okay, let's start. At the bottom of the standings, they started off the season house on fire, 1-0 against Adamson, who we were incredibly high on Adamson. Yep. I did that game, USD versus Adamson, and when Adamson lost, my jaw was on the floor, and I was like, what? How? I was so high on Adamson. How could they have lost their first game, and they lost to USD? It's like, I might be wrong. And then the next 7 games happened, and then I realized I'm not wrong.
We weren't wrong, but like,
well, the next 6 games happened, right? Yeah, I wasn't wrong about the Growling Tigers at all. They now stand at 1-6. They're at the bottom of the standings. What are your thoughts on USD?
I mean, like, Nick Cabanero needs help. That's the first thing
spicy
that comes to my
spicy Cabanero.
Yeah, first thing that comes to my mind when I talk about USD is just, how can your best scorer like in terms of volume, be also be your most efficient scorer. Like the whole defense is already like looking at him, showing him double, sometimes triple teams, and he still, you know, somehow manages to be a more efficient shooter than everyone else on their team.
Like, that to me is a true accomplishment, by the way.
Yeah. Like, it's so hard to be an efficient scorer in the UAP and
period.
And to be an efficient volume scorer, that's insane and probably like good enough for a contract abroad.
I will say this, Nick Caballero is, in my mind, the most impressive scorer in the UAP this year because of, here's a caveat, because of the defense that he faces each and every single game, because of the load he has to carry, because of how often he has to carry that load, and because of how efficiently he still scores in spite of that load. This is what happens, by the way. And look, I don't stalk your Twitter, so I'm not sure if you're out there during games that I do just hating on me for things that I say. But I did say that Nick Caballero kind of has a usage rate of like the best guy on an Intrams team. And I mean that with every bit of a compliment as I possibly could. Because he rebounds the ball, or someone rebounds the ball. They hand it to him in the backcourt. And they're like, Nick, go. Go. And then he dribbles full speed to the opposite end of the court, runs through whoever, bumps into whomever, and then ends up with a layup, a floater, a mid-range jumper. Sometimes he has to settle for a three, whatever it is, and still ends up with an efficient clip. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how USD continues to just have that as their best option, but he is doing it nonetheless. And look, I'm all for Nick Caballero. Nick Caballero is, I mean, what more? What more can he do? What more does he have to do?
I mean, it's funny you bring up the usage rate thing. Like, in the UAP, there's number one. It's Jerome Lastimosa. And just, like, close behind in terms of how much, how often possessions end with a shot from you, a turnover from you, or an assist from you. Caballero's number two. They're neck and neck, really. It changes by the game. If Lastimosa has a great game, he goes number one. If he has an off game and Caballero has a big game, Caballero goes number one. So it's just between the two of them, they're pretty much one-man offenses for their respective teams.
But the way those two usage rates look on court, that's the stat. And the eye test tells you something completely different. Because how Jerome ends up with those points, assists, or turnovers, and how Nick ends up with those points, assists, or turnovers at the end of possessions look dramatically different from each other.
Yep.
One looks like it's on purpose. The other one looks like he's by himself out there.
And that's because at least Lastimosa has a bit of help.
A bit of help? If you compare it to Caballero, like, Lastimosa's playing with like the 2012 Redeem team.
I was just being nicer, but yeah, that's pretty much it. At least Lastimosa has guys who can space the floor for him, like Hanapi, and Caballero doesn't have the same benefit.
Can you imagine what USD would do right now to get Vince Magbuhos on their team?
Oh, man. Like,
they trade a third of their campus right now for Vince Magbuhos, Didat Hanapi, and
Joem Sabandal.
Joem Sabandal, they trade half of España for those three players right now. Like, they'd give up the entire avenue. USD, we wish you the best of luck. To the fan base, I say it all the time on TV, anywhere I can say, you guys are the best, unquestionable, Ginebra included, the best crowd in all of Philippine basketball. You guys come to each and every single game, despite the six-game losing streak. And by the way, this doesn't look like any odd regular six-game losing streak. This is a tough six-game losing streak to watch. And you guys have been there each and every single game. You guys deserve better.
The thing with them, though, it's not like they're historically bad. They were worse last season. Like, they're just run-of-the-mill bad. And that's a testament to how good Caballero is. They're run-of-the-mill bad with an objectively worse roster, and that's because Caballero stepped up and he became a legitimate star in the UAP.
Yeah, he is a star. He is a capital S UAP star. Yeah. Enjoy sushi next year, Nick Caballero. I heard someone say, it's okay, second year pa lang ni Nick.
About that.
while that is true, yeah, it could also be his last year.
He just played 1 year. he's only 19, which is like kind of insane, given that some of the stars here are like 24, 25. He's out here, actual teenager.
He is an actual true capital S UAAP collegiate star. Is Nick? I have nothing bad to say about Nick Caballero. I wish he had a better team around him. Because the UAP is much more fun when USD is good. Good luck in the second round, USD. But this streak is looking dangerous. Dangerous. Speaking of, let's move on. 2-5 is what it says on the record. A team that, I did not expect them to be 2-5. I did not expect them to start 0-5, the FEU Tamaraws. Big get by them, beating NU to end the first round. What are our thoughts on FEU?
I really think it boils down to poor shooting from their best shooters. Looking at Cyrus Torres and Brian Sahon, they're shooting sub 30%. I think it's like 19% for Sahonia, 26% for Torres. And these are way, 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 way down from last season, where they were both around 41-42% from deep on solid volume. And a lot of that might be because there's a guy in Curry right now balling his mind out. RJ Barrientos was, in a lot of ways, their offensive engine and why they were the second best offense in season 84. He can attack the rim, which opens up passing lanes to the outside for their shooters. And he can create his own shot, which demands a ton of defensive attention that their shooters feed off of. And without that, LJ Gonzalez, who is a very good player, and Royce Alforque, who is a great player but not the offensive player Barrientos is, are struggling to create the same type of looks for their shooters. And a lot of it is just plain old bad shooting luck. Like, if you remember the NU game, Torres was getting like wide open looks from the corner, the left wing, and he just wasn't making it. And sometimes in a short college season, 14 games, a lot of it boils down to, you know, slumps and hot streaks. And for FEU, they're slumping really hard right now.
I will say this. What you said to describe Royce Alforque, which probably is an accurate way to describe any other FEU player, not the offensive player that RJ Abarrientos is. Hey, it's not an insult. Hey, by the way, that applies to almost every single person in the UAP, almost.
Yep.
So don't feel too bad about that. Second of all, I've seen these FEU games up close. I've done an FEU game myself. The looks that Cyrus is getting, because the game I did, Sahonia went off. It was the game against USD. Sahonia just found his rhythm, found his range. Cyrus, been getting, I wouldn't say great looks. Obviously, the looks last year from RJ and LJ were slightly better, but he's not getting bad looks. To your point, that game against NU, not an isolated case. There's sets for him. They give him enough time. They give him enough time to launch that thing, especially for the caliber of shooter that he can be, that he has been in the past, and that I'm pretty sure he can maybe touch again before this season is over. Whether or not that would be too late is, I guess, a big question. But I don't want to give him an out. I don't want to give him an out and say, yeah, it's just a slump. It's just a bad shooting streak. There's no way to describe it. This is an elite shooter. This is a guy who's going to get Gilas looks in the very, very near future of his life because of his ability to shoot the three ball. And, you know, it's just, hey, this happens. If a league is this good, this happens, right? If your UEs and your Adamsons and your NUs, if those three teams are all good, and this year they're all good, then guess what, FEU? You can't walk into games expecting wins. And you can't win on bad shooting slumps, which is what they're on.
And you can't afford, like, any little mistake. These teams can capitalize and they can just, like, take the win from you.
You mean any Pachuente minute played?
Pachuente. He's...
How much do they miss last year's foreign student athlete?
Very, very, very much. If I recall correctly, the NU game was the first game where they won the minutes that Chuente has played. And looking back on last year, Ojula was clearly the third best foreign student athlete, and Chuenta is not that. They're minus 21.
You are nicer. You are nicer. Yeah, you are trying. I appreciate that.
They're 21 points worse in the midst that Chuenta plays, and he's their best, I mean, not their best, their biggest player, and the guy who's supposed to be stopping the attacks at the rim, and that's just not happening.
This is a testament to, I guess, how maybe unsatisfied they are with those Chuenta minutes. When they played USD, that was the game that USD's foreign student athlete was suspended. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't there, which meant, hey, traditionally, typically you'd think, all right, feed Chuenta time. Feed your big man time. They played Pat Chuente a minute and 23 seconds. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but I think I have it down to at least plus or minus 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. And they
were like, oh, finally, a chance to go full small ball. And they won that game.
Can you, I want you to guess. Guess his field goal percentage.
For the season?
For the season.
I thought you were nice. I thought you were trying to be nice. 16?
Oh, no, no higher. Come on.
Okay. 21% field goal shooting.
There we go. 21.7.
Wow. Wow.
He was better in season 82, to be fair to him.
He was. He was a whole lot better in season 82. Oh, well, maybe not a whole lot.
No, like, compared to this, yeah, a whole lot is proper.
Yeah.
So basically, FEU is missing their two most important players from last season, the heart of their offense in RJ and the heart of their defense in Ojula. So it's really tough for Seiko Tresella. It's really hard to pin everything on him when the pieces that left weren't replaced by equivalent pieces.
I don't know what you can pin on him because he's out there scheming the shit out of these games, trying to put FEU in good positions to win.
It's amazing that they're 2-5 with poor shooting and the loss of their two most important players. They're still in the final four picture, and that says a lot to how good like the rest of the Tamaras are and how good the coach is.
And you know, if you just look at this roster based off of just names, I think that's why there's such a big disconnect, especially when they were 0-5. Now that they're 2-5 and they just beat a team that was tied for first in the league, people are starting to maybe calm down. But if you look at LJ, Cyrus, and Alforque. Those were the three names I think that we were expecting to really be the big three for FEU walking in. And then you look on a secondary level, Cholo is back. Patrick Sleet took that step.
He's not my favorites.
He took that step and Brian Sahonia, especially in that game against USC, proved that, you know, he can take that step as well. There's a lot of really good players on this FEU team. They are a true FEU team in the sense that they're just filled with good players. Like Ace and Dagon was giving UP the business.
Yeah, I saw.
Ace and Dagon almost made Goldwyn grow hair. He was frightening.
He's shooting 81% from the field right now.
He was frightening against UP. There are a lot of good players on this FEU team. And, you know, if the UAAP was a 30-game season, I would not be worried at all. I think that they play better in the second round. That's a safe bet. I think they finish better than 2-5 in the second round. I just think they run out of games.
Yeah, I feel like losing 5 of their games in the first round would be pretty much a death sentence for their final four chances. But they're just one game back from the guys who are tied in first place. Obviously, the chance is still there. It's just hard to claw your way back up after a horrible start to the season.
Seen it before. Seen crazier things.
Yeah. FEU. They're like exactly. Season in.
Exactly.
I remember what I said last time. I don't think they'll make it to the final four, but I won't be surprised if they did.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I won't be surprised if 3 of those guys end up on Gilas one day. It would not be the shock of my life. Shout out Coach Olsen.
Cholo, Cyrus, these guys are pretty much almost locks to be at least in consideration.
At least in the
like
pool.
The near future.
Yeah.
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 There is no reality. Hey, Doctor Strange, there's no multiverse. There's no universe where Cholo and Cyrus don't make it onto Aguila's training pool.
Yep.
There's just none. There's just none.
They should have already been in it, as far as I'm concerned, but, you know.
Let's not talk Gilas anymore. You know, I thought it was my fault. I brought up Gilas. Let's not talk Gilas. All right, let's move on. Shout out Coach Olsen. Good luck, FEU. If I'm any team in the second round, I'm scared to play you. I will say that, because you guys are deadly. Next up, the De La Salle Green Archers. What in the good holy hell are the De La Salle Green Archers doing this low in the standings at 3-4? Technically, they're tied for fourth. Technically, we had them as a top three team in the UAAP. So using that logic, Mr. James Ryan Alba, someone could go, well, they're just a spot down from where you guys said they were going to be. The only problem is they're at 3-4, tied with UE and with Adamson. And they are they're two full games back from NU at third place. Well, for NU and Ateneo tied for second place. No, so technically they're tied for third. That was my bad. Oh, no problem, LaSalle. Oh,
the thing is with them,
don't panic after all.
They already have the best player in the UAP after the first round. And they're still 3-4. And then they also have the best point guard, in my opinion, Evanelli, still 3-4. And the thing with them is they're really confusing.
And like, how many front courts are you taking before you take the LaSalle front court, right?
Yeah, probably just two?
Just UP?
Anchuame. Probably just UP and Anchuame.
Exactly. So what is... Okay. This is where we go back and kind of admit some of our mistakes, right? Which maybe we'll do. Maybe at the same time I won't do. I'm not sure. I'm starting this sentence. I don't know how it's going to end. But here's my point. You're right. Nelly has been who we thought Nelly was going to be. Mm-hmm. Now, Nelly has not been what Nelly thought he was going to be. But Nelly, in his opinion in the preseason, truly believed that he was going to come in here and be the second coming of Renren Retuelo. Or Mike Cortez, or insert great point guard here. Which, by the way, I don't have a problem with. That's what makes Evan Nelly a really, really good UAP point guard. Because that kid has all the belief in himself, as he should. He's been playing well. I'll give that to you. Shawnee Winston, outstanding. Just outstanding. Just the most instant 2 points in all of the UAAP. Ange, Carl, anyone else included. Shawnee, from the mid-range, is just like that is soaking wet water, right? Also, not a pushover on defense. Not a pushover on defense whatsoever.
Leads the league in steals.
Yeah, yeah. You know, has some moments here and there where he really looks like being the conversation for top five two-way players in the league. He's been that good. And then we said that Mike Phillips, that combo, Phillips, Kiambao, the other Phillips, Nuanco, they were going to be Cortez. Now we thought would maybe get some minutes, getting a lot of minutes now. We knew that was going to be solid. They're okay. They're okay. Like Motor Mike puts up his numbers, but we said that the hole for LaSalle that they were going to try to fill was that wing position, right? How much could CJ Austria, Joaquin Manuel, that combination, that rotation, if they were going to go three small, right? You know, if Shawnee slides down to the three, like how much production could they get out of that 3-and-D spot? And then the other question was Mark Nonoi. Like, do they have any idea what they're doing with Mark Nonoi? Is that it? Is it just because the wing persists to be not a sure thing for LaSalle, and the Nonoi problem is still a Nonoi problem. Is that enough of a justification as to why they're 3-4?
Nah, I think it's more layered than that. First, their offense, we've talked about their half-court offense, their lack of shooting, all of that, and they remedied that by going on transition. They play at the fastest pace in the UAP and get the most transition of opportunities by far. But at the expense of what? Rebounding, despite having probably the best or like at least the most deep front court lineup in the league, and it's not probably not even a competition, they're not really getting defensive rebounds as much as they should, and they're allowing too many offensive rebounds, which makes their defense not quite as good as what it was last season. So it's like a problem with them. Are you going to keep giving up some of your defense to put up a decent chance at scoring on offense? And really, that's, I feel like, and then when you talk about the rotations, what happens when Winston sits? They're plus 21 on the floor with Winston and they lose without him. What are they going to do with Winston sits? Do they play Evan Nelly without him, or do they rely on Penny Estache or Mark Nonoy? And I'm not going to go.
It doesn't seem like they're either, and it doesn't seem like they're excited to play either of those two players.
I would prefer Penny at this point. But Mark Nonoy, he's really talented. But the thing is, he's never been an efficient shooter. And if you look at his percentages with USD, all the games, UAP and otherwise, and LaSalle, they're kind of the same. 25% from deep with USD, 24% with LaSalle. The thing is, the problem is more magnified because one, they're not winning. And two, he's being tasked to be a primary playmaker when he's on the floor. And he was never really that with USD because he had Subido beside him.
It's definitely odd when the number one transition team in the league, who also has Mark Nonoy, has a Mark Nonoy problem. Because, like we said in the preview, I think we said it out loud when we were asking, is this, you know, a great fit? Like, is this a relationship that could work itself out after a rocky start of Nonoy in the LaSalle system? Certainly hasn't been the case. One round in for season 85. Again, it's not on Mark Nonoy. It's not on the coaching staff. The coaching staff has definitely decided that there's a way that they're playing, and Nonoy maybe doesn't answer the needs that they have out of that sixth or seventh man off of the bench to lead that second unit. And I think they're trying to fast track Penny into making him ready to be that guy. Your question is, what do they do when Winston sits? So far, the answer to that is, don't sit him.
And we saw it happen when he sat their last game that went to overtime.
It's been... they're definitely the disappointment of the first round. I think that LaSalle will be the first to tell you that they're disappointed with a 3-4 card. Which is not to say that this team can't go 6-1
or 7-0
or 7-0 in the second round, and then we're all just like sitting here looking like idiots.
Yeah, that's the thing with LaSalle. They have the talent to win it all. It's just a matter of like putting the pieces together, finding out what fits, and finding out how to maximize the talents of their players. The thing with them right now is they're overextending Kevin Kembau, who has to shoulder a lot of the offense in the second unit because the point guards aren't really cutting it without Winston. And I mean, there's just a lot of issues with LaSalle that are fixable, but do they have enough time to fix it is the main issue. And I still feel like they have it in them because you can't really argue with the talent. And at the end of the day, usually the most talented teams find a way to win.
And what I will say to that is maybe in other seasons. Maybe in other seasons. This season, this is what happens. As that chart goes, you fuck around, you find out.
They're finding out.
And right now, LaSalle is finding out. Will they fuck around less in the second round? Maybe. Hopefully. Because you're right. Do they have the talent to be UAP champion season 85? Absolutely. Is that talent going to be enough? Not this season. Maybe a couple seasons ago, maybe two seasons from now.
I'm more optimistic than you in that. I'm going to say maybe for that. They might not be like the same shiny favorites in the top of the leaderboard that we thought they were going to be, but stranger things have happened and worse teams have turned it around after the first round. So we'll see that,
my friend, we can agree on. Some piss poor talented teams have gone on pretty crazy 5-2 runs in the second round before. So that is very much possible. I've been courtside for like a Pauli team that just went a stupid 5-2 run in the second round after they were 2-5 in the first round. So you know, it can happen. Lesser teams have done it. You are right. My big question is always, which of these two teams at the top, and we don't know which two teams that will be. It's going to be either UP Ateneo or NU. Maybe still LaSalle, who knows? But most likely it'll be UP Ateneo or NU in two of those three teams in those two spots. Which one of those are you picking to beat two times in a row? I'm not saying the road is impossible. I'm just saying the road is really, really hard.
Mm-hmm. The odds have become like very much stacked against them. And yeah, just I guess keep the faith.
I'm just saying it's the format. The twice to beat Final Four format is something that, while exciting and while it provides incredible stakes for each of those games, and sometimes just one of those games, most cases, do I want it to be a best of three? Maybe. I don't know.
Best of seven?
I don't want it to be a best of seven. I don't want any teams playing a best of seven. The value of those top two spots, more than ever, especially when the margin between teams is so tight, becomes so much more.
Huge advantage, and they saw that last season, where they were on the brink of beating UP twice in a row. And it took a miracle for them to lose.
They outplayed UP 7 out of 8 quarters, in my opinion. Yeah. And then they got Carl Tamayo in the end, which, you know, an eventuality. All right.
It happens.
LaSalle, what do we say to LaSalle? LaSalle, get it together, LaSalle. Come on. Come on. Add you guys on a tier all of your own with UP and with Ateneo. Come on. You're making me look bad. Come on, LaSalle. Made me look like an idiot out here. As always, UAP much better when LaSalle is good. I'm happy for them. They got that Ateneo monkey off their back, though.
At least they can show that they can compete with every single team. It's just a matter of like consistency and being able to do that every night.
And a lot of these losses are close games. Mm-hmm. A lot of these losses are close games. Now, they have no business being in close games with some of these teams, and let alone losing to them. But hey, UP going 6-1, those are 6 close games too. Uh-huh. They just had one blowout against USD, so it could have very easily been switch positions between LaSalle and UP.
It could have very easily been 3-4 this season. But, you know, you can't control how the ball goes.
They deserve to be 3-4. All right, we'll get to them in a second. All right, let's talk about my favorite team of the first round. Led by the Targaryen brothers themselves, Nico and Kyle. The Paranadas and the UE Red Warriors. How much do I love this team? I'll tell you all the ways I love this team. They lead the league in 3-point attempts. That's the only stat that matters to me. As soon as I saw that, I was like, yep, that's them. That explains it. They will take, often miss, but sometimes make, any 3-pointer that you will give to them. And they have no problem about it.
Mm-hmm. As long as they have space, it's like, why not?
Sometimes without space, they'll just chuck it. And I love it. You know what? This is a team that doesn't have a strong inside presence. They have a couple of versatile swing and big guys. And definitely, you know, the entry of Villegas into this program has proved to be incredible in terms of the dividends it's paid for UE so far. It allows them to have a reliable, stable playmaker that's not a point guard. The pressure for Harvey Pagsanhan to be this 25-point-per-game Nick Caballero type is off of his shoulders, and he's playing much better because of it. Nico Paranada is proving to be like, that could be someone, if I squint my eyes enough, I see running a PBA team. And then Kyle Paranada just believes he's Steph Curry. Like, Kyle Paranada believes he is Steph Curry. Does he look like that little kid in the fighting pits during that House of the Dragon episode that had Targaryen hair with no shirt on? Yeah, yeah, he looks like that. But who cares? That guy will score 15 points on your head with one eye closed. Again, sorry for all the Targaryen references, but I just feel like the Paranada should have been platinum blonde. I love this team. They are in any game that they play in because they can make 6-7 three-pointers in a row.
I mean, did you see the Paya Wall Street? Like, he had, like, what, 5 points in, like, just a few seconds or something? That's the type of team they are. They can get hot in a hurry and make games close. And they have, like, they can play far out with Villegas, who is the best shooting big man in the UAP, Carl Tamayo included. And they have two Spitfires. They're just a really, really talented offensive team. And they're empowered to take a bunch of shots that lesser players would get screamed at. And that's why they've been really fun.
Dude, talented players would get yelled at for the shots that they take.
Then my favorite thing about them, though, is Villegas. I think the guy's going to be one of those 10-15-year careers in the PBA, if he chooses to go there, of course, and get, like, maybe 4, 5, 6 all-star nods. He's a really talented guy, but he's not the guy you give the ball, let him isolate the post 20 times a night. But he's a guy who plays within the team, knows his role, finds open guys, makes open shots, plays solid defense. He's basically the guy every coach wants on his team. And he's, like, 6'8", and that's just the cherry on top.
How does a PBA player become an all-star? Answer me this off the top of your head.
Don't they have fan votes or something?
Ah, you're not sure. No one is sure. You don't know.
No one is sure.
Speaking as someone who has judged the PBA dunk contest in the past, I'll tell you right now, I have no idea.
No one is sure.
By the way, the fact that they made me a PBA dunk contest judge tells you everything you need to know. I got so much shit for that, and I deserved it.
Is that the career highlight? Your career highlight app? That's number one, and the Kagulangan call is number two.
Kagulangan call is number three. PBA slam dunk judge number two. Joe DeVance lifting me by my ankles and dumping me in a cooler filled with ice when they won a grand slam. That's number one for me.
Can't top that.
You literally can't. UE, look. Do the UE Red Warriors have flaws? Yes. You might think to yourself, hey, how come you guys don't say anything bad about UE? Here's the thing. I didn't expect 3 wins out of UE in the first round. I might have expected 3 wins out of them for an entire year. They're punching above their weight. They've earned not to be called out for defensive lapses, for their inability to match up with any true talented big in the UAP, or their... Quite frankly, their insistence to only shoot semi-contested three-pointers when
half of their shots are one or two
screens away from an open layup. Who cares? They're fun. They're overachieving. They've proven me wrong already, and I love them for it.
And my favorite part is every time the UAP, their players get interviewed, all they want is other teams to respect them. And they got what they want. I feel like there's no team out there who thinks that UE is just going to be a walk in the park. Because you know there are two tiny dudes over there that, like, drop 5 threes, threes in a quarter.
Hell no. For everything I said about USD, I don't think any team is looking at any team thinking it's going to be a walk in the park. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe they think that about USD. But guess what? Caballero could still embarrass you and drop 35 on your head.
Like, as long as you stop Caballero, you're fine. But if you don't, you're in trouble.
Yeah, and sometimes even when you do, like, contain him, he still finds ways. He's really super special. Anyway, hey, UE, good luck, man. Good luck. Are you guys a Final Four team? Maybe. At this point, freaking maybe. I have no idea who's taking that fourth spot. No idea whatsoever. Like, do I think it's most likely going to be LaSalle? Yes. Am I going to put money on it? No.
No.
They just went 3-4 in the first round, having an incredibly talented lineup. So, you know, UE, good luck. Good luck, man. I mean, you guys can shoot yourself out of any mess. You can shoot yourselves into messes, but hey, that's okay. Your program has taken a major step already. And for that, I think that you guys should be very, very happy with yourselves. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Adamson. The Adamson Soaring Falcons salvaged this first round. they are thanking the Lord above that LaSalle hasn't gotten it together, that FEU hasn't gotten it together, and that NU at least, and that NU at least has lost twice. Yeah. But man, all love to Coach Nash, who's come on to this show. That if you come onto our podcast, I'll tell you this, you get preferential treatment. I'll say that right now. Because you come onto our podcast, that makes you family. But man, I really expected Adamson to not be 3-4. Is that a crazy unfair expectation?
Not really, because they look like they found the pieces to improve upon their last record. They got shooters in Ray Allen Torres and AP Manlapas, who's only played one game. And we saw Cedric Manzano, baby boy, look much better in the preseason. And Jerome Lastimosa is still Jerome Lastimosa. So it was a pretty rational thing to think that they were going to be better and that they were going to be like one of the favorites for Final Four slot. And, you know, things happen and they're still in the running. But they haven't like ran away with the number four slot as we expected.
Third leading scorer in the league at 16.7 is where Jerome is. That's like a full point behind Caballero. And almost 5 full points away from Shawnee Winston, who's just like incredible, as we've said. 16.7 from Jerome, like that's not terrible. He's giving you 5 assists per game, also third in the league. He, as you said, Jerome is Jerome. He is him, as they say. Those corner threes, they're right there. I don't know you're the stat man. I don't know what they are in terms of corner threes this season, but I feel like I don't remember the last time they made one. And those are open shots. Jerome gets them from there.
And that's the thing is they're only slightly worse this season from three than last season. They were 25.3 last season, 25 this season. So it's basically the same issue that Jerome is in a team that doesn't properly space the floor for him. And he's out there doing magical stuff with the ball. And
more Lenda threes? Is that the solution now? More Lenda threes?
I feel like it's time to free him. He's 5-for-7 as UAP career. Coach Nash, let him take as many as he wants.
I mean,
it'd be fun to see, though. Like,
I mean, I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't say... If I'm Coach Nash, the next game, I just let him shoot 3 just like right off the top. Mm-hmm. Just bring that average down so you can stop letting him take it. Just get it over within the first quarter. Have him go 0-for-3. All right, you're 5-for-10 now. All right, cool it. You're not Chris Bosh. You're not Karl Anthony Towns here. Just, you know, take a breath, Dirk Nowitzki.
There's one thing with them that I want to point out, though. They have been way better with baby boy on than off. But the thing is, Manzano can't stay on the floor at all. He's averaging 3.1 fouls per game.
Dude, he wakes up with a foul. Yeah. It's so frustrating. He's such a talented guy. Obviously, his motor is very high, and the fouls come with that, especially with the youth. But some of the fouls, like, it's so frustrating. Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating because you just want to keep him on the floor, and you can tell Nash wants to keep him on the floor. It's just that he can't help himself with some of these ticky-tack fouls.
Like, he has that JP Aram, Raymond Almazan can't control his limbs type thing going on. And
that's a good example. Yeah, that's a good comp.
That's the problem with him. It's like, instead of going up straight up to challenge out verticality, he likes to poke around. And instead of grabbing ball, he grabs wrist or arm. And that's an easy call for the refs to make. And I think it comes with maturity and just like learning not to learn not to extend your arms and like go for the ball every single time.
I can understand some arguments he makes with the referees, though, because he says that people do it to him. And he's right. And he's right. And maybe I haven't helped him because I call him baby boy. And now everyone calls him baby boy. But for the record, your mother called you baby boy on national TV. And she made a giant sign out of it. And it's incredibly endearing. So next year, in his third UAAP year, when he's maybe among the league leaders in rebounding and blocks, maybe they won't call him with those ticky-tack fouls, but right now they are calling it on you. So Cedric, stay on the court. Stay on the court because we love seeing you play.
And that's for your team's good own good. They really need him.
Also, am I just the only person who's just like, man, Vince McBuhos could play on any team?
Oh, Vince McBuhos. Don't get me started on him.
Vince McBuhos.
He's one of my favorite players to watch on defense. And he can shoot a bit. We saw him like drain a ton of threes one game. But the defense is...
I think he can shoot better than what his percentages say, yes.
Mm-hmm. He has the confidence. He should just let it fly.
But okay, so I'm not the only one that thinks this guy could play on any team in the UAAP.
Yeah, like for real, he's a guy every coach wants. He anticipates passing lanes. He switches out.
Yeah. His feet are good.
I think I posted a clip on Twitter. Just he made a layup, and then the camera, as usual, closed up on him, and you can see his eyes realizing there's a guy who could get a pass wide open, so he just runs to it, darts to it. And then he gets the steal, gives the ball to Lastimosa, who gives it back to him for a layup. And that's the type of stuff that I love seeing. Like, you can see the gears in his head move on defense, him reading the play and anticipating the pass. Like, oh, that is the type of stuff that I love seeing. And
Easy. Take a breath, man. Drink some water.
Man, don't let me get started on like quality defensive plays because I can't stop.
I'm going to isolate the clip of you just going, oh, Vince McBuhos. I'll bring it to the telecast, and every time McBuhos scores, I'll just play that like off my phone straight into the microphone. I'm not sure if you're hearing this. I know Coach Nash listens to the podcast. And like I said, if you come on the pod, you get preferential treatment. But I'm not sure if Vince hears this. But Vince, let me tell you, we appreciate you. We're mm-hmm. such big fans of you. You're going to have a long and very fruitful career playing basketball, sir. And the way you switch out some of these pesky, really, really crafty, most of them pretty dirty guards in the UAP is truly incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. There is not a single UAAP team that would not benefit from you playing 20 minutes for them. Now, maybe Coach Nash doesn't want me saying that because... it might generate a Vince McBuhos transfer market, which we don't want. But yeah, Vince, for as great as Jerome is, for all of the jokes that are made about Baby Boy's name, Vince McBuhos, central to this Adamson team. And are they the fourth Final Four team? Maybe. I mean, at this point, maybe.
No one knows, really.
I'm not sure about any of these guys. All right, let's talk about the most... intriguing team in the UAAP this year. Well, at least in the first round. They went 5-1, only losing to Ateneo, which, you know, might as well be 6-0 if your only loss is to Ateneo. So great job by them. Then they come back down to earth a little bit, but they get pulled down by a very interesting game. Like, of all the people to bring them back down to earth, it was FEU, which was super strange because they could not get their offense going at all, and they got out-uglied by a team that likes playing ugly and maybe whose only choice now is to play ugly. But other than that, NU, like, those five wins are not just, like, fluky wins. Like, those are legitimate good wins. So I don't know where to place NU. I don't know if I'm like, oh, they're going to go 5-2 again next round. Or, you know, oh, they're going to fall back down to earth. They're going to go 3-4 in this next round. We've seen it happen before. And NU is a classic case of one of those teams that I don't know what my opinion of them is after 7 games.
And the fun thing with them is their best player, in our eyes before the preseason, still hasn't exactly gotten it going yet. Kian Baklan is, I feel like he's struggling a bit with the size in the UAAP. It's not quite the same as what he faced when he was still with USD. Playing in the D League and in Phil Oil. And I feel like he hasn't gotten the time to gel with his team. That's causing a lot of the turnovers that he's throwing around. But like after one round and a few more practices during this break, we don't know, man. We could definitely see him just rise up and maybe wrestle the Rookie of the Year away from Kevin Kiambao. Or he could just continue struggling and figure it out next season. We don't know.
So if you're a UAAP fan and you've come from, I don't know, hibernation, come from out of the country, you just arrive, you're right in time to start the second round, you look up the standings, you go, oh, and you, oh, 5-2. Oh, they have Troy Rosario back? Like they have Bobby Ray back? Like, what's happening here? There's not a star on NUU, and I believe Kian Baklan is a star.
He hasn't played.
He hasn't played like a star. So that pretty much tells us there is no star over at NU. So if you're asked that question, how in the hell is NU 5-2? I have
then
my
you
answers.
See Steve Nash.
But then I'm sure you have your stats to back up why they're as good as they've been.
I feel like their best player so far has been Jeff Napa, to be honest with you. They run one of the tightest defensive schemes in the league. They know how to play the press without wearing down their guys. They can like play hard defense for four quarters, and they're a really deep team. Even compared to like the top teams, there's 8, 9, maybe 10 guys deep, which means fresh legs in the end game, and they're like the perfect underdog team in the sense that there's no star. They're not really, they don't have the, let's say, the budget of Ateneo or
who does,
or UP at this point. And they're just making do with what they have with a great coach, great schemes, and finding a way to beat the top teams in the league other than FU.
You bastard. Jeff Napa, great coach.
Great coach.
Great coach. I've said this, I don't know how many times I've said this and to how many people, but I'd play for that man any day. Any day. Any day, that's the type of guy that, you know, a kid of not elite talents like myself would probably really just fall in love with playing for, because he gets a lot out of the guys that he has.
My favorite thing about him is that he puts Steve Nash and Kian Baklan at the same time together, like two guys, some 5'9". I'm not believing all of the listed height stuff that they have going on. They're not 5'9", they're not 5'8". And he puts them on the floor at the same time together, and they killed UP with that lineup. And it was one of the most fun things I've seen this season.
And they can do that because of, and this is what I want to talk to you about when it comes to NU. Because for all the talk about elite teams have elite front courts. In season 85 of the UAP, it's going to be the front court. Mm-hmm. Ateneo has Kwame, period. But, the, you know, he also has Balungay. He also has Josh Lazaro, who we were expecting to take a huge step this year. Plus, he's Ange Kwame. So there's your front line right there, right? I mean, you know, add in who you want to add in. Jia Chu, add in Chris Kuhn, and like whoever, right? Ateneo front court, check. LaSalle front court, we talked about it. Kiambao, two Phillipses, Nuanco, check, all the way around, right? Great front line. UP, right? Maybe the best three, the best top three in terms of all of those front lines in Malik Diouf, who's been UP's best player. Oh man, I can't wait to talk about Malik later. Oh, I'm so excited. I love that guy. Carl Tamayo and Zave Lucero.
Yeah.
Sure, right? That you mm-hmm. you got the guy wearing the freaking Hulkbuster suit and Gallinato coming off the bench. Then, you know, front line. And use front line. Not a lot of glitz, not a lot of glamour, not a lot of height, not a lot of front line size on that front line either. But man, they've been so impressive. Minerva, Malonzo, Omar John.
I love that his last name is John. Like, that's my favorite thing about him. His last name is John.
Yeah, exactly. And those guys frustrated the hell out of the UP front line. And they did it because of an unbelievable motor, a great switchability between almost all of them, especially Minerva and Malonzo. Incredible instincts as rebounders. And they really just bought in 100% into what Jeff Napa is running and the roles that are needed out of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that those guys, while they may not be the biggest or most talented, I think that is the most cohesive front line in the UAAP so far.
like they just play well together.
Exactly.
They know what to do, where to rotate. If they're blitzing, the guy in the dunker spot, the low man knows how to rotate and cover the drive. Mike Malonzo is like incredible with his sense of offensive rebounding. He just feels, at least when you watch him, it just looks like he has a knack for knowing where the ball is going to land. He's not the tallest guy. He's not like the other Malonzo, but he knows where to be and where to go. And the ball just finds its way in his hands. And he's been one of the better finishers this season at 60%, I think, from the field or something like that. Oh, 60.6% through shooting. So he's been very efficient, very hardworking. Just this team is like the perfect underdog team. And you wouldn't be mad if they beat Ateneo.
And so we go back to the discussion earlier about how important those top two slots are, right? Because if you're NU, you are very, very, very reasonably looking at a top two spot. Mm-hmm. Number one, maybe number two. If you finish the first round 5-2 and you finish third, that's disappointing. Mm-hmm. You've graduated now, if you're NU, from breaking into the Final Four to breaking into the top two. Let's face it. Mm-hmm. Right? Because, sure, teams have gone to the finals from the four seed. Teams have gone to the finals from the three seed. But as we said, do you want to do it against UP? Do you want to do it against Ateneo? Maybe not. Probably not. Is there a team that believes that they can do it? Most likely NU. But still, why make it harder for yourselves?
Just an easier route would be the best.
Exactly. And there aren't exactly any easy routes. But if you're the team that has to win twice, then that's definitely the harder route. So yeah. If you're NU, you're currently at 5-2. That's essentially what the price to pay is now in the UAAP, which is most likely at least maybe two losses for every seven games, right? Who you lose to, like, it'll matter down the line. You're pretty sure if you go 5-2 again in the second round, then that second slot is in play.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. If you really want it, you have to go at least 6-1.
That is a sure thing. If they go 6-1, yeah, they're probably they're definitely a top two seed.
If they're 11-3, right? But if they go 5-2 and they're 10-4, then you know maybe they can fall into a tie, and then that tie for the number two seed requires a playoff, and then instead of a twice a beat, you just go into like a best of three, right? Mm-hmm. So you gotta really, really take care of yourself here, and take care of some of these quote unquote winnable games. Now the question is NU 5-2 good, or is NU hot?
They're not even hot.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll let you explain that in a second, because I think that's the question, right? Did they catch teams on a bad night? Did they get in a good rhythm, or are they a team that's 5-2 against seven games?
I feel like they're for real, because they're not. Like, they're not on an insane shooting streak. Like, you could argue UE has been in some of these games. They're actually a below average offensive team. They're scoring at a rate of 3.6 points worse than league average. And what's carrying them is defense, which is something that they can bring every night. And their stars, their quote-unquote stars, like John Lloyd Clemente and Kian Baklan, they aren't exactly shooting the lights out. And honestly, NU... There is a slight chance that NU is better in the second round if these guys can get their shots going.
And I don't think that defense is going anywhere, man.
Yeah, the defense isn't going anywhere.
I don't think their defense gets worse. I guess this is my long and winded way of saying I don't think their defense is going to get worse. I think that defense is what it is, and if they start shooting better, it's not crazy for them to dream of a top two seed.
Exactly.
Which is mind blowing. Because that means either UP or Ateneo has to make it to the finals by beating UP or Ateneo or NU twice, which is really hard for me to imagine anyone doing.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with the UAP right now. It's like the parity in the league right now.
Have I told you I love this season? Have I told you that? Have I said that? How, yeah. Okay, I have.
But feel free to keep saying it though, because this is an incredible season so far.
And you. You guys are a really good basketball team. You, mm-hmm. if you know, I don't root for any of these teams, man. But I'm rooting for NU to have a crazy second round. Mm-hmm. I think that defense, like I said, is gonna stay great, and I think they can only be better on offense, because Lord knows they have been some tough stretches for them on offense, and yeah. Lord knows that they have the talent, especially those two guys, right, Clemente and Baclan. They have the talent to really deliver special offensive performances. Mm-hmm. So NU, best wishes again. Had I been a younger, more talented child, I would have found my way to play for Jeff Napa, because that guy is an elite coach. Shout out NU. Good luck. All right, let's go to the Ateneo Blue Eagles, tied with NU for second at 5-2. Technically, they're ahead of NU because they have the win over NU in the tie, so they're in second place. Not a Blue Eagle team that they're going to make statues out of. Which, to be fair to them, is the same thing that Tab Baldwin told us in so many words when we interviewed him for the preview. Again, if you come on the podcast, you get preferential treatment. But, mate, Tab was right. He said that this team was going to have its struggles. He said that this team was not as good as previous Ateneo teams, you know, which is kind of like an obvious thing to say, because he's had a team go 16-0. And the team that followed that up, even though they lost in the finals, you could argue was maybe more talented. So that wasn't a controversial thing to say. They still finished nicely at 5-2, only dropping games against their arch rival LaSalle and UP. You know, if at the start of the season you told me, hey, at the end of the first round, Ateneo's only going to lose to UP and to LaSalle, and be like, all right, cool, that makes sense. They also still, though, have the greatest... have the largest winning margin in the UAP, and it is not close. So they've lost two close games, and when they do win, they win by a lot. So
they beat the teams that they should, and that's a lot on the coaching, the ability to play consistently despite knowing that you're favored. They don't play to the level of their opponents. If they're playing a worse team, they show how much better they are than them. And they do it on a nightly basis. But
So they're the anti-Fighting Maroons?
Yep, they're pretty much the anti-Fighting Maroons. If you're a bad team, we will beat you, and probably by a lot.
Even if you're a good team, because they have beaten good teams by a lot. You know, we mm-hmm. just sang NU's praises. We just said, you know, Adamson, UE, these guys are deadly. Dangerous when they wake up on the right side of the bed, and Ateneo's taking care of business against all of those teams. But you know, hey, this isn't a league for second place. This isn't a league for third place. At the end of the day, they have to figure out if they have what it takes to win 2 out of 3 against most likely UP or NU or LaSalle, as it is right now. It's crazy even like throwing LaSalle in there, but you know, I guess they'll make it there somewhere, somehow. But that's the question for Ateneo, right? It's not Final mm-hmm. Four. It's not top 2 seed. It's finals, right? Mm-hmm. To be fair to them, they're a dominant program that makes it to the finals every single year. Is this a team that can win 2 out of 3 games in the finals? And I think if you ask them, I'm not sure that they're pretty confident with what their answer is yet. After 7 games of season 85.
The biggest difference here is they don't have as much depth as they used to. They're the worst bench team in the league.
They're the worst in the league.
And that is like the luxury that they've lost with all the departures. They don't have Gian Mamuya coming off the bench. They don't have Tyler Teo coming off the bench.
20 points last game. Yeah, in the PBA.
Tyler Teo has been incredible. But like, I didn't think he was going to be that good. He never shot that well with Ateneo. Maybe in the same year he did. But, like, he probably should have been the number one pick.
At this point, yeah. He was going to be this
good. Yeah.
By the way, Tyler Teo should send Matthew Wright a monthly stipend. Thank you for going to Japan, because they were forced to give me all these minutes and all these shots. And, you know, Tyler has proven everybody right for doing that and by doing that. But you know, he's definitely benefited from it. And you're right. That's a big, big chunk of offense that Ateneo is missing off the bench.
Mm-hmm. And Ange doesn't really look the same. I mean, he's still ridiculously dominant, but on defense, for my taste, at least just mine, he's not quite as quick, not quite as there yet. And he's fouling more than he ever has. The thing about Ange is he was going to lock the rim down and not foul. This season, the fouls are on the higher side, 2.9 per game. And hopefully he recovers more, like gets his rhythm back after missing a huge chunk of time. Because Ateneo will definitely need him 100% in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that if you want more Ateneo content, there's a lot of places talking about Ateneo. Same thing about UP because they're the top two teams. For me, that's a big question mark. Is that bench? Who is going to be able to be reliable for them off the bench? Are they going to be able to continue to be an elite put away team, meaning, you know, lead by 10, 15, 17 points against all of these teams? Can they take care of that record, get a top two slot, make it an easy trip to the finals? Because it's dangerous. It's a dangerous season. 85 hasn't been dangerous for Ateneo, but you wouldn't be surprised if it happened. If I'm them, as I said, I need to go 6-1. Need to go 6-1 here in the second round. When the stakes are kind of like that high, when the margin of error is that slim, when you don't have that much offense coming off of your bench, and you're facing teams for a second time now, and you maybe don't have as much harmony as you did in previous installations of your team, I think that those are the most questions we've had about the Ateneo team after a first round than we've had in a long time, which I think is a fair thing to say.
Mm-hmm. And one more thing about Ateneo is they need to get a lot more production out of their top guys. Dave Aldefonso, he's finally back in a similar role to his NU days in terms of how much they're asking him to score. But the thing with him is he hasn't been as aggressive going to the rim, maybe settling a bit too much for jumpers, which he hasn't been converting on so far. And he's really probably, like, if we're going to rank them, who would we pick if they all went to a draft? Dave Aldefonso is at least a top three pick. And I probably expect him to show more of that in the second round because we know how good he is. He just hasn't shown a lot of it yet. His last game, though, was a great step forward. It was his best game so far.
Yeah, he's number three. If everyone currently playing in the UAP went into a PBA draft, yes, I would pick David Lefonso third behind Kyle and then Nico Paranada. These are easy choices you're asking me to make. All right, well, we'll see. We'll see, Ateneo. We'll see. You need some points off of that bench. You need to be able to get Dave easier looks, better looks. Maybe some of that is on Dave. We'll see. All right, let's talk about the league leading defending champion 6-1 UP Fighting Maroons. There's a world that this same Maroons team finishes the first round 3-4, 4-3. Somehow, some way, they're fortunate, and I say that fortunate enough to trip into the second round with a 6-1 card. They've only seen JD Kagulangan play once. It was against Ateneo in that overtime win. They didn't have JD or Coach Goldwyn in that loss against NU. So I don't want to say excuses, but the silver linings are definitely there for the Maroons, who at this point, at some point, still look like they're figuring out their rotation. Maybe that's the reason why some of these games that shouldn't be close actually end up being close, because UP's trying to, you know, finagle with some of their rotations, maybe to their benefit later on down the line. The Lucero minutes, when they are there, you know, are what you expect, more or less. Carl Tamayo's really shooting a lot of threes, but you know, if you're Carl Tamayo, I guess you could do whatever you want. And Malik Diouf has been like secretly the league MVP. Like definitely looks like the best player on the court a lot of the time. What are your thoughts on UP?
First, I want to talk about my guy Malik.
Oh, he's your guy now.
Yeah, he's my guy. He's my guy. Like, I've been watching him since he was with CEU, and when he went to UP, I was like, yeah, like I was so like, hyped for that because he's 6'11". But the thing I like about him most is his ability to pass. He is unquestionably, even with Kevin Tiambao in the UAP, the best passing big man in the UAP right now, and I will stand by that. And that's not even the thing he helps UP with the most. That's defense. I have a stat here. It's called net plus minus, which is just how good the team is with you minus how good the team is without you. Sure. And Malik Diouf just demolishes everyone else. UP is 31.6 points better with him on the floor. And that just goes to show how much value he has for the team. He may not be putting the same numbers as Ange or Shawnee, but his impact on the floor is, like, I wouldn't say immeasurable because I just measured it with a number, but you know what I mean.
it's definitely, look, UP doesn't become a bad team when Malik goes to the bench, right? This isn't like a Shawnee Winston, Jerome Lastimosa, Lord knows it's not a Nick Caballero situation when if any of those three guys go to the bench and you're a fan of that team, you're just all of a sudden praying. When Malik goes to the bench, UP goes from an elite team to still like a pretty good, maybe slightly above average team. But he really raises the floor and the ceiling, the entire household, the entire building for UP when he's on there. You said he's the best passing big in the UAP. He will give you one random baseball pass as if it's someone who accidentally presses X on 2K, but instead of the shortest pass, he goes for the longest pass. It seems like a spam. Like like you know how you accidentally press square on 2K and it just randomly that's what it feels like. He'll have one of those passes each game. But I think it's
We can live with that. Yeah. And that's the thing about him is he loves trying these ridiculous passes. And a part of me who's all for passing, like that's my favorite part of the game. That's what I love about him. He can see over anyone. Like you can have a 6'7", 6'8" guy, his hands are raised, trying to block his vision, but he can just like raise his arms and throw a bullet to the guy inside for a layup without an issue. Like
it's impressive to watch him play because as a short roller, as a high post man, as a low block passer, and yes, even sometimes as a Hail Mary Patrick Mahomes opposite end of the floor passer, I think he's A+ in all of those spots. And you know, I think it really gives UP just this incredible threat. UP is able to play three big now without many teams making them pay so far, which was a big, big problem they had last year trying to find ways to have Lucero, Diouf, and Tamayo all share the court together. They don't need to do that, but come the playoffs, they might have to if any of their wings get cold. They haven't been made to pay. I think that's a testament to Zave was in great shape last year. He's in better shape now. So is Malik. And Carl's in much better shape this year considerably. From last year. So as help defenders, as closeout defenders, I think that's the reason why they can play those three now.
Tamayo particularly has improved so much on the perimeter. Like we talk about his hands a lot for the steals, but his feet have been moving very, very well, especially to where he was last season. Last season, put mildly, he wasn't a good defender. This season, I can definitely say he's become an actually positive net positive defender on the floor, and that's made a lot of difference for UP.
Yeah, and that's the reason why he's able to have the gas that he has in these fourth quarters when they need his heroics sometimes, is because teams aren't spamming him to switch onto high pick and rolls because he can hold himself, he can hold his own there more or less. Speaking of defense, I think that's what sets UP apart. Outside of just an electric Terence Fortea in the first round, who seems to make every three that he throws up there, So he's been fantastic. Obviously, when JD comes back, that rotation is just going to get even better. But the combination, or the rotation rather, of Spencer and Alarcón at that two or three spot, and Abadiano, it's a hell of a nightmare if you're anyone not named Shawnee Winston, man. Because it is just so tough. Like, even guys like Dave have like a B plus, A minus, A defender in front of them.
Yeah, and then even if you get past one of those guys, there's Malik Diouf waiting right underneath the rim.
Yeah, or Lucero, who's hiding somewhere and just like will creep up behind you like Vagar for no good reason.
He's just so flexible. Like, it's the weirdest thing. He is like, have you seen some of the catches he makes? He goes full Odell Beckham on some of that, on some of those catches, and it's one of the most fun things to watch. Like, I feel like we can reserve a whole 2 hour slot for just UP, though, just between two of us.
Yeah, which we're trying not to do. Again, this isn't a perfect team, not by a stretch. They've played to the level of every opponent that they've played against,
and there's except a reason maybe for USD. That, I think there's a reason for that, is that their half court offense, especially without Kabulangan, hasn't been pristine. They were very good last season, but this season they're barely above average on offense. And Terrence Fortea, as good as he is with shooting, he's not exactly, how do you say this? He's not exactly a playmaker yet, in the sense that, in the same way Kabulangan was last season, he still doesn't read the pick and roll coverages as quick as he should. He gets in trouble against blitzes. He mistimes or fires inaccurate passes. But the great thing about this is Kagulangan will come back at some point in the season, and Fortea is getting really important reps for his development. That's just going to benefit UP or whichever Korean team he signed with in the long run.
You can trap the hell out of this UP team. They've had trouble with the trap. They've had trouble getting the ball across. Their best trap solution is to hand it to Carl and have Carl bring it down and go big versus big.
Which is kind of wild.
Yeah, so that's kind of like, you know, that's kind of like a big problem for UP. They go on in just like unbelievable slumps. That's more unbelievable than the hot streaks that they go on. And they've been winning most of these teams, most of these games, if not all of these games, on their defense, on their rebounding, and their size. You know, how much of it is because they are playing with lineups? Because, man, they've had some weird ass lineups,
especially against UE and USD. Like,
they've had some weird fives, dude.
They still haven't put out the five that I want them to go with, but like, that's fine.
Okay. Well, what is this five?
Turku is the point guard.
Shut up. I know where this is going.
Tamayo, shooting guard, small forward, Lucero. Then Galinato at the four, and Diouf at the five. Just go full 6'5 or higher. Please give me that, Goldwyn.
Galinato at the four is like, that's a t-shirt. Like, I just want Galinato at the four, which is like the ultimate like UAP basketball nerd thing that you could have. Galinato at the four. If you're listening to this podcast, and if at any point you see Henry Galinato share the court with only Malik Diouf, because that's the only time that Galinato will not be the five. if Galinato and Diouf do share together any minutes at all, tweet us, please. Tweet Ryan Alba, tweet me, just say Galinato at the four, sound the alarms. Just put the alarm emojis on there and we will get you. We'll know you're our people. UP, they're still in danger of falling out of the top two, as you know, as what we've said. Are they going to play better than 6-1 in the second round? Probably not. They need to at least match 6-1 to have a pretty comfortable ride into the top two seeds. If they fall as a three seed, as good as they are, and they have to win a game, they have to win two games against Ateneo or NU, I don't think it's a return trip to the finals. Not even for them.
Like, yeah, and that is true. And the thing with them is their consistency. Like, hopefully, they finally gotten over their second quarter slump. The only time they won the second quarter,
yeah, it's against USD. So does it count?
Does it count? Yeah, hopefully though. But like,
fingers crossed.
The thing with them is, they're usually just playing against themselves, we're being honest.
That's true. When I said earlier that some of these teams beat themselves, I was talking almost exclusively about UP.
Yeah. And hopefully the bald man, UP's bald guy, like, you know, gets his kids in the right track and they make another trip. Because the last time they had a chance to repeat, they didn't do it.
Who knows? Who knows? We can only cross our fingers, because that's the best question, is who knows? With this season, none of us really know.
No one really knows.
And the second round starts up again on Saturday. That's Ryan Alba. At him. At him with any of your takes. He will come with the facts. He will come with the stats. Or at the very least, the most appropriate GIF for whatever the basketball situation is. Ryan, I appreciate it, and we'll talk again at some point, most likely before the Final Four starts.
Appreciate it, and thanks for having me again.
Thanks a lot. Thanks to everybody who's tuned in. Enjoy the UAP, folks, and keep in touch with us on Twitter and everywhere else. See you guys again very, very soon. Bye.
I want a million lives. I want a billion profits when all that I got is a villainous mind. I keep a real in the pocket while you hear the venomous lies. I do not speak like a prophet, cause I got a million styles. Let's see what's really inside. Pulling over in the whip, flying out another trip.